The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 1st, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Happy October. Can you believe it? It is October 1. September has come and gone, and college football is in full swing, NFL football is in full swing, and postseason baseball is now in full swing. And yes, I use that pun intently because baseball regular season is done and the postseason is upon us. And I can't wait to talk about it here today. You know how Tuesdays go here on ESPN. You've got me, Jacob Goins, in this show for the next 2 hours on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And I cannot wait to talk all things postseason baseball. We got another baseball power hour for you. This time, playoff edition, as Lindsey Crosby joins us in studio from Braves Today, the First Pitch Podcast, Auburn Daily. He does it all, talking all things baseball. Lindsey, my man, great to see you. Happy Tuesday, happy October, and happy postseason baseball.
It is definitely happy because the Braves are in the postseason. It looked touch and go there for
barely
a minute yesterday in
barely
that doubleheader, but no, it is great. We get game one is going on right now, and we will pretty much have baseball all day, every day for the next, not quite month because you'll have off days, but close to a month, you're going to get some really good baseball, high-level baseball, every single day.
I cannot wait, man. So many storylines to get to. Who made it? Who was just on the outside looking in? And, of course, we got to talk about how the Braves did make it to the postseason. They made it a little stressful for Braves fans yesterday, but a lot to get to on the show today. If you want to be a part of the Baseball Power Hour, you are more than welcome to do that. Phone lines are open. You can be a part of the show, 334-321-1390. You can call in with your comments or questions in terms of the Braves making the playoffs, other teams that made the playoffs, or even teams that did not make the playoffs. You can be a part of the show, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot me a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. Christian Griffin, voice of the Lee Scott Warriors, will be in here in the next segment in just a few minutes. He is on his way, so he'll be joining us in the studio for the entire show. And a reminder that in hour number two, we'll talk all things college football, get some of his thoughts from Auburn's performance this weekend, more reaction from you as well coming up in hour number two. But let's look at the playoff picture, Lindsey, because it's official. You mentioned it already. There's a game going on right now, the Tigers and the Astros in the first wild card game in the American League. But I want to zoom out and look at the entire playoff picture, right? Look at the entire playoff bracket that is now set in stone and what we will be seeing in the postseason this month. Are there any matchups that really catch your eye right now in terms of what we're going to see over the next week or so?
I think the most intriguing matchup to me from a potential for chaos perspective is the Kansas City Royals versus the Baltimore Orioles. Orioles are the 4 seed, so they're hosting both these games in Kansas City. Game one will be soon after this Tigers-Astros game ends. But two teams that are both going in the wrong directions down the stretch. Kansas City had the worst run scoring in baseball from in the month of September.
Nice.
Worse than the Chicago White Sox. I know, right?
Who made history.
Who made history with their 121st loss. While the Baltimore Orioles, since the trade deadline, have had a losing record. So two teams that got into the postseason, I'm not going to say barely because the Orioles are the 4 seed, but kind of limped in, underperforming where they could be. And part of the reason the Royals have struggled so much has been the loss of Vinny Pascantino, their first baseman. I want to say it was a broken thumb, something broken. 6 to 8 week recovery timeline. He is active today, and he's expected to bat either second or third in today's game.
Okay.
So they hope that he can do well. And then for the Orioles, they are really in a situation where they need Corbin Burnes to win today. He has the staff ace. They made a big trade with the Brewers to get him in the offseason. They need him to win because outside of him, their pitching staff has been very suspect. And with all of the injuries they've had in the infield, Jackson Holliday was having to play every day and was not doing well. Coby Mayo had to come up, prospect, and play every day and was not doing well. They can't reliably score runs like they need to. They haven't been able to do it down the stretch. That's why New York pulled away and the Yankees won the division. But I think the potential is here for a lot of chaos in that one. And whoever wins that series gets to go to New York to take on Aaron Judge and Juan Soto and the Yankees.
They get to, or they have to?
They have to. It's not an easy road either way.
No, it's not. And the thing with that series is it's a matchup, like you said, of two teams who have been pitiful down the stretch, but somebody has to emerge, right? Somebody has to win. Maybe ugly baseball, maybe tight and entertaining, right, because of these two teams struggling down the stretch. But somebody has to win, and then, like you said, they go and take on the Yankees. So, yeah, chaotic-wise, I think that's a great series and a great place to start.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be tons of fun there. And Cole Reagan's going for Kansas City. This is a situation. He was traded by the Rangers to Kansas City last year for closer Aroldis Chapman, and then obviously the Rangers went on to ride Chapman to a World Series. Cole Reagans gets his chance in the postseason with Kansas City. Huge turnaround. They lost over 100 games last year.
Yeah.
And they go from that to in the postseason. It's a great story. Really excited to see what both of these, they're really young teams. Both of these teams are young. Excited to see what they can do here with the thought process of this won't be their first time in. But the game that's on right now is the Astros versus the Tigers. This is the unstoppable force and the immovable object. The Detroit Tigers have been one of the best teams in baseball down the stretch, whether it's looking at trade deadline, September, whatever it might be, while the Astros have just been dominant. They have been in the NLCS or the ALCS, I believe, 7 straight years now.
Yeah.
I mean, they've won a World Series. They've been to multiple World Series in that stretch. And can the Tigers find a way to knock off the Astros?
Tigers' story has been it's been incredible.
I'm not a
Detroit fan by any means, but it's been an incredible story.
They sold at the deadline. That's the wildest part to me. They stole at the deadline. They sold at the deadline, sent Jack Flaherty to the Dodgers. He's probably going to start game one for the Dodgers on I think it's Saturday. And since then, all they've done is ride Tarik Skubal, who's going to win the Cy Young. They've been doing this whole thing with two conventional starting pitchers, a bunch of openers, and a bunch of bullpen work. From the trade deadline to now, they have the lowest number of innings from starting pitchers of any team in baseball. They also have the lowest ERA from their pitching staff as a whole.
Sheesh.
And at some point, you have to think, this is going to stop working, and it hasn't stopped working yet.
Yeah,
so
the Astros-Tigers winner goes on to play Cleveland, right? Goes to play the Guardians in Cleveland.
And you have to feel like that Cleveland's bullpen's been great, the offense hasn't been amazing, and this could theoretically be a winnable game. The question here is just, can you do it? Can you can you get out of this first series without blowing everything in a 3-game series?
So those are the two series in the American League, the Orioles and the Royals, the Astros and the Tigers. That game currently being played. And as we look at it, an update on that score, it is still 3-0 Tigers in the middle of the third. On the other side of things, on the National League side, it's the Milwaukee Brewers. They were waiting yesterday to see who they were going to play, and they now take on the New York Mets. Thankfully, or I guess because the Braves split the series with the Mets, there was all sorts of crazy math going on with that yesterday, but all of that has been settled. Mets and the Brewers, your thoughts on that series in the first NL wildcard matchup?
This is really tough, I think, for the Mets, because not only did they just go to Milwaukee and play a series over the weekend, but the Mets have not had success against the Brewers this year. The Brewers have been surprisingly kind of a juggernaut. They haven't dealt with the same amount of injuries the Braves have, but they've still have dealt with injuries or subtractions to the team in general, put it that way. Corbin Burnes was traded. Craig Counsell, the manager, defected for the Chicago Cubs. Brandon Woodruff, their second best pitcher, out for the year. before the season even started with a shoulder issue. Devin Williams didn't throw a pitch, their all-star closer, until late June. And right before he came back, Christian Yelich was lost for the year. And like all that they have done is just gone out there and rolled. And when the Mets won a meaningless game over the weekend against the Brewers, it was the day after, it was the final game of the series. They won 5-0 on Sunday. That was the first time in 6 tries that they had beaten Milwaukee.
Jeez.
They had been outscored by 11 runs this year, and that was with winning that game 5-0. So it's been a lot of domination for Milwaukee against New York, and now the Mets have to go right back up there and do it again. It feels like this is probably the end of the road for the Mets, but at the same time, I thought that yesterday, and then Francisco Lindor hits a home run in the 9th inning and gives the Mets a win, and so it's going to be close. I have that one going. I think that's going to be the only one I have in 2 games. I do think Milwaukee takes it. I think New York just played too many games with the doubleheader in Atlanta. I just don't quite think, other than Francisco Lindor, they have the horses to hold up to Milwaukee. And I do think this is a Brewers win, and they move on.
And speaking of the Braves in the final wild card series, they are heading to San Diego. Well, they're already there to take on the Padres in San Diego. And an update for all of our ESPN listeners, this entire series, the entire wild card series, tonight, tomorrow, and the IF game on Thursday can all be heard right here on ESPN 106.7, the national ESPN broadcast. Roxy Bernstein and Greg Olson, Auburn's own Greg Olson, will be on the call on ESPN Radio. So you can catch that tonight. Night at 7, tomorrow at 7, Thursday at 6, if that game is necessary. Braves and Padres, when we get back from break, we'll talk about how we got here. But just your initial thoughts here, Lindsay, on the Braves taking on a really, really solid San Diego team.
This is probably Atlanta's toughest, or probably the toughest matchup in the first round of any team that's in it, because they're rested. They have a very good pitching staff. The bullpen has been amazing since the deadline. They added a bunch of pieces there. The offense is very dynamic. They lead the league in batting average. They lead the league in lowest strikeout rate. They're 17.7%. Next closest team is over 19%. So they match up well with Atlanta's strengths, which is the pitching, and then obviously Atlanta's pitching. They used 9 different pitchers yesterday in the doubleheader, including both Joe Jimenez, the setup man, and Raisel Iglesias, the closer, twice.
Yeah.
And they threw starter Ronaldo Lopez for an inning. It was a very college baseball feel in that doubleheader, throwing dudes twice, having a starter come back for a bullpen on the field. But I think Atlanta can win in 3 games. It all comes down to, can they find a way to get a win in game 1 behind youngster A.J. Smith-Shawver?
So you would have felt better about them playing Milwaukee than you would San Diego.
I would have rather faced Milwaukee than San Diego, simply because I think San Diego is the best non-Dodgers or Phillies team in the whole bracket.
Man. Well, we're going to talk about how we got here, because yesterday was an insane day for the Atlanta Braves. We gave you updates throughout our show and here throughout the afternoon on ESPN, but the Braves are in. They're in the postseason. And they take on the Padres, Brewers taking on the Mets, Royals and Orioles, Astros and Tigers. We'll talk about all of those matchups, what we could see, possible divisional series matchups as well. All that and more as we continue on with our Baseball Power Hour edition here on During On The Line on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Baseball Power Hour edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. We got Lindsey Crosby in the studio with us, and nice of this guy to show up. Christian Griffin, voice of the Lee Scott Warriors, joining us in the studio. Only a few minutes late, my man, but hey, better late than never. It's okay.
You know, we had to go to Atlanta for game 2.
Shut up. Yeah, you this guy texted us in the group chat yesterday. Yeah, yesterday, because we were going to get together for Monday Night Football, right? We were going to go somewhere, watch the games, because it was a doubleheader.
Yep.
He says, oh, I'm in Atlanta. And we were like, hold up, because we had joked about going to the games, and then we thought he was going. No, he was over there for a completely different reason. But you could have lied and said you were there and just claimed it. But
I probably should have.
Then we would have asked for pictures.
And that's fair, yeah. I have some in the camera roll that I could show somewhere.
Got you. Like, and you lost your disposable camera. That's what happened.
Showing the photos makes great for great radio.
Right. It really does. And the fact that I'd show that it's like a night game at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm sure it would make it really believable.
Oh, goodness. Well, we appreciate you being here. Always glad to have you in the studio. And, of course, Baseball Power Hour continues. We just got done talking about and kind of doing a quick preview and overlook of all of the playoff series. But I want to dive deeper into how the Braves got into the playoffs, because as dramatic as it was, it came down to games 161 and 162. And that's something that not every team is a part of. Not every fan base wants to be a part of that. But Christian, it was dramatic, man. But the Braves find a way to do it. Game two is how they did it. Game one was just wild to watch. But overall, the Braves do end up making the postseason.
They do. Game one was the perfect definition of being an Auburn fan and a Braves fan. Just the amount of hope they give you, then it's taken away, then they find a way to respond, and then it's just completely ripped away.
Also, both Auburn on Saturday and the Braves on Monday lost a game that they had greater than a 90% winning percentage, or 90% chance of winning.
Auburn's was 98%. How high did the Braves get?
I believe it got to like 95.
I was
going to
say, I think it was 95.
Because, I mean, it was the ninth Jabba. Inning with, I think, yes. one out in 2-8. The ninth inning when it happened.
Jabba 2-8.
And it applies to both.
And then, I even talked about it. I didn't think that it could apply to both of my teams at the same time. I thought it had to go one or the other.
There is a theory about this. I have seen some Auburn fans who are not Braves fans, who are still mad that Auburn / Braves fans, people who root for both teams, rolled the trees in Toomer's Corner after the 2021 World Series. And I have seen Auburn fans talk about that was a curse, because Auburn football has not been the same since then.
I was one of those people. I'll admit, I was there. I watched that game downtown, celebrated, and sprinted with everybody out of the bar and went straight to Toomer's Corner. So.
You could even go before then and say when Toomer's was rolled in the Final Four in 2019.
Ooh. Yeah. See, at least Auburn winning a game, though. Although that was, I think the Final Four was different because they rolled it prematurely, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, because Auburn ended up losing.
Yeah, ended up losing. Mm. Double dribble.
So the Braves are in the playoffs. The scenario yesterday, we all knew what it was. We talked about it on the show. But the Braves simply had to win a game. Win one, and you're in. And yesterday looked good. They were up. They were up. They were up. And then they weren't. And then they were again. And then they weren't again. And they lost game one to the Mets yesterday in dramatic fashion. But they came back and, I'm not going to say dominated, but they handled business in game two, Lindsay. And they were able to win their way into the playoffs. And I think there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, I mean, after everything you've gone through this year, and I've said it on the show before different times, but like there was a stat that came out, and I don't even think that it properly encompasses exactly how big of a deal what Atlanta did. And the stat that they had, this was, I believe it was from OPA Stats, the Braves lost Spencer Strider, Ronald Acuna, and Austin Riley to season-ending injuries. No other MLB team has made the playoffs in a year where three of their opening day starters missed the final 35-plus regular season games. Mm. So, and I would argue it's obviously been much worse than that. Strider only made two starts. Acuna was lost in May. Here's the thing that kind of explains for me how bad the injuries were for Atlanta. And I think I've said this on here before. The Atlanta Braves opening day lineup, including Spencer Strider, right? Even if you take him out, whatever, the Braves opening day lineup got a grand total of 7 innings together this year.
Say that again.
The Atlanta Braves opening day lineup got 7 total innings together. Because Sean Murphy got hurt in that first game. He got hurt in the 7th inning on a swing with the oblique injury. And then since then, all of the injuries were right before somebody else was due to come back. Ronald Acuna Jr. got hurt in May. Soon after that, Sean Murphy came back.
Yeah.
And then you saw Michael Harris get hurt. And like all of the injuries, or one of the Ozzie Albies injuries was right in there. Like all
they were
of the
just
injuries,
staggered.
They were just staggered, and they were offset where the guys never got to play together before they were gone. And so that opening day lineup, 7 innings is all you got out of it. Out of 162 games, you got 7 innings of all 9 of those guys on the field together. And so the fact that they're in to me is like that is just you heard the stat that no other team's done that with those three players, opening day starters, missing 35-plus games to end the season, and it's been much worse than that. And that's kind of how the Braves feel. They're like Brian Sitker said, like, it doesn't matter how we got in. We got in. And that's all that matters. Like, we have a chance now. And this is 100% the definition of house money. There is zero pressure on Atlanta. The first time they get eliminated, people are going to be like, we don't expect them to be there in the first place. So if they go on a run, it's just going to be like, it's just money in the bank right here.
And I love the mentality that Matt Olson had prior to this series where it was, yeah, we've had injuries. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
It's time for us to simply go out and win. And that
was championship
kind of
mindset.
Right. And it was kind of the mindset that you had to have that. And then I love the video that was going around of Chipper Jones in his early part of the career talking about the Mets coming home to Atlanta. And he was saying, hey, they're going to have to come into our backyard and beat us twice. Hats off if they do it. But I don't think they'll be able to. And I just think that saying is such a cool video because it looks a little retro and it's one of the best to ever do it. And so that was the mindset going into it. And I think Grant Holmes speaks for the Atlanta team as a whole
Dog.
Where you expected you expected Chris Sale, yes, to go out and be the guy in game two. And all of a sudden, 30 minutes before game two, it's, back spasms, Grant. You're up. See, here is your entire season. Here is our entire season.
Yep.
Go out and do what you do and just absolutely dominate it on the mound.
Go out and do what you do, given the fact that you pitched an inning and two-thirds the day before. He was eating lunch, and they were like, hey, man, we need you to start in 30 minutes.
Hey.
And he just got up from his lunch and walked away and was like, go get ready. And he throws four scoreless innings, one walk, seven strikeouts on 53 pitches. We have not seen a Braves pitcher throw four innings the day after throwing at least one and two-thirds in over 30 years, the last time it actually happened, which was a different age back then, right? But, I mean, dude's a dog.
If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready, right? That's the saying as old as time, and it seems like that was the scenario in that situation. And I know that Braves fans were disappointed when the Phillies clinched the division, right? The streak ended and Philly got it. And for a team that started so hot, talking about Philly, that was an average baseball team throughout the rest of the back half of the season. I mean, it's disappointing to lose that. But to go back to your point, I mean, this team dealt with stuff that teams just don't normally deal with to that extent, and they've done something now that they were not supposed to do. History says this Braves team should be nowhere close to the postseason, and here we are. We get at least two more games.
I think a good comparison is the Yankees last year. Like, you look at the injuries. Judge was out for a little bit here and there.
I could see that.
But they had a bunch of other injuries last year, and they didn't make the postseason. They just collapsed. I mean, they were playing meaningless baseball for 3 weeks in New York, which doesn't happen a lot, right? And, I mean, it's not a perfect example, like the injury to injury, but that's kind of the idea. You know, they had a Cy Young winner, they had an MVP candidate, and they sat at home. And Atlanta's going to have a Cy Young winner this year, and a guy that was on pace to be a top five MVP finisher, Marcell Ozuna, probably still will be, and they're in the postseason. And the difference has been Atlanta was able to... All these replacement players just stepped up and did stuff. Gio Urshela, Ramon Laureano batted 300 with 10 homers for you. And it's amazing. And again, you're in, and that's all that matters. You are 0-0 today, and you have as good a chance as anybody else to go on. And actually, fun fact on Fangraphs, Braves have better odds to make the World Series than the Mets do.
Yes. Small victory, baby. Small victory.
Got to take them when you get them, right?
Absolutely.
I feel like you could also, in a really weird way, compare this team to the 2021 team that won the World Series. Obviously, trade deadline versus guys that you have to pick up because of injuries. But with how those guys have stepped up, comparable to the guys that picked up at the trade line during the 2021 season where nothing was really supposed to come out of it. Then all of a sudden, you got hot at the right time and played the best baseball in late September and into October. If the Braves can catch fire, I mean, if you can have somebody where, I mean, we saw it where you have one or two guys that didn't necessarily do that great during the regular season, or somebody that you picked up at the trade deadline or because of an injury, somebody like Matt Olson could have a 400 NLDS, and all of a sudden, you know, like an Eddie Rosario against the Dodgers in 2021, where one guy can carry you through a series.
Which is what makes October baseball so special, and it starts officially today. It's underway right now as the Tigers and the Astros are underway. Braves play tonight against the Padres. Reminder, you could catch that game, tomorrow's game, and the IF Game 3 all right here on ESPN 106.7. Coverage starts tonight at 7 o'clock. We'll talk about this Braves team a little bit more, how they can take down the Padres, start getting some picks and predictions for the wild card. That's all coming up 30 minutes into our Baseball Power Hour.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Full house in here today for our Baseball Power Hour postseason edition. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Lindsey Crosby in the studio with us and Christian Griffin here, as he is every single Tuesday. And we're talking about MLB postseason, MLB playoffs, and the Braves are playing the Padres. We now know who is starting tonight, Lindsey, for the Braves on the mound. We'll get to that in just a second, but I have some questions on how yesterday went down. Because the Braves were winning yesterday in game one, and all of a sudden they get to the bullpen after what was a really good start, and you bring in guys that you feel you could rely on and did not perform very well, but then some question marks on who came in near the end of the game for me.
Okay, so what happened with the Schwellenbach, Joe Jimenez, Raisel Iglesias thing is it kind of came down to how rushed everything was. The plan, Spencer Schwellenbach has never gone eight innings. So a little bit of uncharted territory, but his pitch count was in the low 80s, right? So the idea here was, here's what we're going to do. We're going to let him go back out for the eighth because he's not allowed to run yet. You know, he's barely allowed them to get hits at all. We're going to have Joe Jimenez warming up at the same time. So they go batter by batter. The idea is if Schwellenbach gets into trouble, you can go get him and put Jimenez in. But he got into trouble so quickly. First batter, I think it was Starling Marte, 10-pitch at-bat. So they had to rush Jimenez in there probably a little bit earlier than they would have liked. They probably would have liked to give him a few more minutes to warm up. They get him in there. Three batters, doesn't get any of them out. Three runs go up. They go to Iglesias. And Iglesias is in that same situation of he was getting up really quickly because the plan for him was the ninth, not the eighth. So they rush him in there. He gets one out but gives up a couple runs. And they finally have to go to Aaron Bummer to get out of it. And then because you had burned those guys already, the guy that they've used all season as that backup closer when all of their when their high leverage guys are all used, has been Pierce Johnson. Now, AJ Minter had been that guy for a while. He's out for the year with a hip injury. So they've been going to Pierce Johnson. And the issue with the roster construction this year, to me, was they didn't have that former closer veteran to be that guy. Kirby Yates was the guy last year. He came off of Tommy John. He was that guy where if you had thrown Jimenez, you had thrown Minter, you had thrown Iglesias, and you had to get three outs and get a save, they sent Kirby Yates out there, and he did it. They didn't have that guy. They went with Pierce Johnson. He gave up a home run to Lindor on the curveball, and that was all she wrote. Very frustrating how that kind of broke down. But the issue here, everything went according to plan. The pitching plan would be Schwellenbach, Jimenez, Iglesias. You can criticize Snit for trying to get another inning out of Schwellenbach and not giving Joe Jimenez a clean inning. But either way, this is how the plan should have worked. It just didn't against the Mets. And sometimes, frustratingly, that happens.
And so now we look ahead to what's going to happen in this series as we're in the playoffs, in the wild card, Braves taking on the Padres, and it's official. We know who's starting tonight for Atlanta and San Diego.
Yes, they took three young players with them that possibly could have been on the roster. They took Ian Anderson, they took AJ Smith-Shawver, they took Bryce Elder. A lot of Braves fans know two of those three names. Ian Anderson, believe it or not, is one of the most accomplished pitchers, postseason pitchers in the organization.
He's been around for a little bit.
Yes. Now, because of Tommy John, he hasn't pitched in the majors since 2022. But in the postseason, he's incredibly accomplished. He's made six starts. He's 4-0 with a 1.26 ERA, and he's only allowed runs in two of those six starts.
Jeez.
I
didn't know it was that good.
Yeah, I know, right? I was lucky enough to be at Game 3 of the 2021 World Series as a fan. In the rain, he gives Atlanta five scoreless and hitless innings before it goes to the bullpen in a 1-0 Braves win. But he hasn't pitched in the majors since 2022 because of Tommy John. Bryce Elder has and has been bad. His ERA is 6.5 in Atlanta this year. And he pitched against the Padres on May 19th, gave up 7 runs, 6 earned on 9 hits and 3 innings. So they didn't pick him. They went with AJ Smith-Shawver. And I like this idea. And I think the thing Braves fans need to understand is AJ Smith-Shawver's stats in AAA are kind of misleading. He is better than what you've seen in AAA. He had a 4.86 ERA with 104 strikeouts and 87 innings. He also walked 40 guys and gave up 20 homers.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to flex a little bit real quick.
Oh, gosh.
I have talked to both AJ Smith-Shawver and his father recently. Part of the issues he had...
Get him on the phone.
Part of the issue he had in AAA this year was, one, he was coming back from injury. He strained an oblique in his start against the Cubs in mid-May. But he was trying to harness some additional velocity, trying to get control of that. And the Braves kept trying to adjust his slider. He had a traditional gyro slider, a bullet slider. It spins like a bullet does, right? They kept trying to adjust it into a sweeper, into more of a slurvy kind of two-plane breaking thing. And they kept going back and forth between what they wanted him to do. So a lot of the bad numbers are because he had to figure out the control with the extra velocity. I mean, he was hitting 100 miles an hour, 9,900 miles an hour this year, when he hasn't done that before. And then trying to figure out, one, how to throw that slider well, but two, how they wanted him to use it. And they finally pulled the plug on it. And it was his urging. He's like, can I just go back to my original slider? And they let him do it. And so, like, his last five starts, he allowed a batting average under 200, 34 strikeouts in 29 innings. I believe it was 6 walks. And so, like, it was looking more like this is the dude that is one of our top prospects, that it was incredibly promising last year. And he's only 21 years old.
Only 17? Or, sorry, 21?
Only 21 years old.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if anybody knew that he was only 21. I just want to make sure that's clear.
We'll make sure that... Greg says that plenty of times.
I'll shoot him tonight. A text. Yeah. I'll shoot him a text.
Every strikeout, every pitch that he throws that's over.
He makes a big play.
Yeah.
Well, Christian, how do you feel about him getting the start? I mean, do you feel that that's the route? Is this the best route for the Braves to try to steal game one in a best of three series? I mean, I don't know the updated percentage. I know it's over 70% of you win game one and the odds that you go on to win the series in a best of three. I don't know what it is currently, but do you think this gives the Braves the best chance to win?
I mean, I feel like from the standpoint of, again, a guy that is polished but still unproven, it's somebody that the Padres haven't ever seen, so that plays a big factor into it. Being young, it's almost like you're immune to any sort of postseason pressure, if you could say. It's almost like what we compared to, you know, you get up there and hit the driver on the hole that is questionable driver. You get up there and you realize you missed water 10 yards to the right, but you didn't know. So you still hit driver. Granted, I mean, you're off the ladies' tee box after the driver anyways. So
yeah. So I whip out driver again and hit it off the deck, pants around my ankles.
But again, it's somebody that I think the biggest thing, it's a young kid the Padres have not faced. I think the biggest thing for him tonight is to simplify everything. There's been so much that's been worked on with him. You talked about the different type of sliders, trying to fix that. Go back to what you know, and if they have the trust in that, keep it as simple as possible. If Darnold or Sean Murphy can call a simple game and let them take control of everything, I think you'll like where you're at.
It's a night game in San Diego. They have a really cool park and a really cool backdrop. Do we expect it to be a good crowd tonight, Lindsay? Do you have any idea?
From what I've seen of Petco in the postseason, I expect this to be a sellout. I don't think they're going to not show up for this.
I hope it is, from an atmosphere perspective.
It really needs to be, and Petco Park is super cool. And also, I am listening on ESPN 106.7, but if you go to watch highlight videos of what Padres do, watch the Padres TV broadcast.
Yeah.
Because Norcillo is amazing. That is such a great call. He is such a great broadcaster, and I just realized it's a national game. He's not going to get to do it.
Gosh darn it.
Similar to the Charlotte Hornets, and they're
is that the comparison, the Charlotte Hornets broadcast?
I would say so to
those
baseball.
Those guys are awesome.
Just talking about it being Slam Diego a couple years ago, absolutely losing your mind.
The Charlotte guys go absolutely insane. Have you ever heard them, Lindsay? It's for the Hornets, the basketball, where they just, they're screaming in their microphones. And they are going electric.
Something that you can do in TV, something that Jacob and I do not have the luxury of being able to do, just to simply scream the word "oh."
Orsillo's not quite that extreme, but I mean, but you'll get the Slam Diego is a common one when there's a grand slam. Fernando Tatis, he plays in Slam Diego. It's so well done. He's one of the better broadcasters in the league, one of the team broadcasters. But I realize this is going to be a postseason matchup. I don't think you'll get him. You'll get a national crew, which is a bummer. But if Atlanta can take game one, because that's the tough one. They get a break on the pitching matchup. They don't get Dylan Cease. They get Michael King in game one. They saw him for exactly, I think it's 2 2/3 innings of relief last year when he was a Yankee. If they can get game one behind AJ Smith-Shawver, you'll probably have to piggyback with more guys because the bullpen's just absolutely smoked. Again, you threw 9 pitchers yesterday. There are 4 different Braves relievers who have thrown 35 or more pitches in the last 3 days. Daisybell Hernandez has thrown 50. Jimenez has thrown 44. You know, Pierce Johnson's thrown 38. Like, all your key guys have thrown a ton. But this is something where if you can take game one, I like Atlanta's chances of taking the whole series. The thing that I'm concerned about, I think I mentioned this at the top of the hour, the Padres strike out less than any team in baseball. And AJ Smith-Shawver is a dude that, he has great stuff. He's been homer prone in the minors. And again, there's some caveats to that, but he's been homer prone in the minors. He is very much a fly ball pitcher. And so that's what I worry about is if the fatigue sets in, the way that fatigue will manifest in a pitcher first is going to be locations.
Yes.
Dudes will miss over the plate.
Fastball misses up.
Fastball misses up. Slider's going to get hung. You know, change up isn't really going to move off the plate. You're going to miss middle. And if he starts to get fatigued, because he's not a dude who's known for going incredibly deep in games. He throws a lot of strikes because he gets a lot of strikeouts. If he gets fatigued, you're going to have a quick hook. But the problem with a quick hook is your bullpen's exhausted.
Right.
And the goal here is to not have to go to Bryce Elder in a game that is still in grasp of either team. Because based on his previous history, Bryce Elder's not very good at keeping that game from becoming a blowout. So that is my concern, is that they're going to foul a lot of stuff off, they're going to run up his pitch count, and they're going to knock him out after 3 or 4 innings, and now this Braves bullpen has to cover a bunch after they covered 7 innings yesterday.
Would you guys say the goal is 6? Is 6 innings from him? I mean, is that good enough?
Not in the postseason. Honestly, if he can get through the order twice, I'm happy.
I was about to say, in the postseason, if you could get through 6, anybody, it could be Tarik Skubal or Chris Sale in the playoffs, you would take 6
You'd
innings
be ecstatic
from,
for 6.
From just about anybody. How much does a factor, Lindsay, of Chris Sale being off the roster for the wild card adds another bullpen or adds another arm that simply did not throw yesterday? And then a second question, a follow-up to what you were talking about with home runs. I know that Petco Park does play a little bit more as a pitcher park. Certain times of the year, I feel like it's weird. It flies at certain times. It doesn't now. Does Petco play more of a hitter-friendly park or a pitcher-friendly park in a series like this?
Being a late start like this, I feel like it is going to be a little bit more of a pitcher's park than you normally would see. A lot of that's based off the temperature and the wind. Now that we're getting into October, it's going to be a little bit later in the day. It's not an afternoon game. It's going to play a little bit more like a hitter's park, and that will help. But at the same time, it's not going to help enough to offset that. And when the Braves set the roster, because of the uncertainty behind who was going to start today and how long they could go, they still used 5 starters. So when they set their pitching staff, and they have one extra guy from last year, the NLDS, they had 12 pitchers. They have 13 this year because there isn't a rule about how many position players to pitchers you have to take. There's not that rule there.
You just have a certain number of players, period.
You just have 26, period. That's it. But they did, Smith-Shawver and Elder are both on there. Obviously, you can use one in relief, but Lopez, Morton, and Freed are your five starters on the roster. So, spare guys, really, you look at guys who are not super worked right now, it's like Aaron Bummer, Jesse Chavez, Luke Jackson. Like, those are your bullpen guys who are probably going to be available unless you decide, hey, we got to have Raisel Iglesias come up and throw again. He threw twice yesterday and on Saturday, but we got to get you to go again because we have to win this game. Like, ideally, the Braves' offense can produce. They were, I have it in the takeaways from yesterday. I believe they were 3-for-28 with runners in scoring position over the last five games.
Yikes.
Not a good number. I'm sorry. 5-for-38. Let me put some respect on their name.
5-for-38.
5-for-38 with runners in scoring position.
Better.
I don't know.
I said 3-for-38. Oh, okay. 5-for-38. Yeah, 5-for-38. And they stranded 38 runners in the final five games. 3 against the Royals, 2 against the Mets.
Oh, that's disgusting.
At least they got them on base finally. Which
going in the right direction, man.
Yeah. And what's frustrating is before that, before the rain delay, the 7 games before you postponed after that first Mets game, they batted .322 with 20 homers in 7 games. Like, they were awesome. And then they've slumped this weekend. If the offense can score enough in the first couple innings to knock Michael King out of the game, yes, they have a good bullpen, but that means you can throw Bryce Elder and not have to worry about giving away the game. That's the best case scenario for Atlanta, is the offense comes out hot, builds you a lead. Bryce Elder cannot blow it so that you can go to your pen and you can use the lower leverage guys for a game, one game, just to give Iglesias and Jimenez and Johnson, everybody, and Lee a day off. That's the best case scenario.
We'll wrap up our baseball power hour when we come back. Lindsay will give us his predictions for the wild card series because it'll be at least a week before we talk to him, and those will be in the books by that time. We'll wrap up our baseball power hour after this on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up our baseball power hour here on ESPN 106.7. Lindsey Crosby is in the studio with us. He joins us most Tuesdays throughout the baseball season, and we hope that we get to keep doing this throughout the next few weeks of postseason baseball. We'll have you on even if the Braves get eliminated and things like that. But
let's hope that's not for another month.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. And before we get out of here, we got just a few minutes left. Got to get your predictions, man, of the wild card series that we have on deck, that we have that are starting. We've got one underway right now, right? All of the wild card series need your predictions quickly here. Astros, Tigers, Orioles, Royals, that's on the American League side, and the National League side, Brewers, Mets, and then, of course, Padres and Braves.
Yeah. Tigers, Astros, I've got the Astros. They are the unstoppable force. Like, they do this every year. They are inevitable, in the words of the Avengers.
Even given the fact I let you cheat and use the score, the current score
that
of the Tigers
are up 3-0.
Game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Yordan 80% is still better than a lot of the Tigers hitters. Like, I love this Tigers team. Don't get me wrong. I've written some freelance articles for SI about them, but it's hard to bet against the Astros, right?
That's fair.
I have the Royals upsetting the Orioles. Wow. 5-4 seed. And it's just, I have less faith in Baltimore, and I have more faith in Kansas City. I think pitching-wise, outside of that first game, Kansas City has the advantage because their pitchers are healthy and Baltimore's are not. And the bullpen, I trust Casey's bullpen more than I trust Baltimore's as well.
I hope Casey wins. I hate Baltimore being good at baseball.
Yeah.
Growing up, they were terrible.
Spoken like a Red Sox fan. 81-81. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, hey, we still had a chance, man. Yes. We still had a chance.
Mets and Brewers. I've got the Brewers. The Mets just haven't shown that they can do it this year. And I'll go one better. I think the dagger is a Rhys Hoskins homer off of Evan Diaz. Mm. I think former NL East opponent Rhys Hoskins puts the knife in the back of the Mets.
I love it.
To clinch this. And then I think he goes on and torments the Phillies in the next series.
I was about to say, and then
well.
To go and play
wow.
the Phillies.
He will torment the Phillies too, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Braves San Diego. If the Braves win tonight, I've got Atlanta in 3. upsetting San Diego. And Atlanta versus LA, I think, would be a great matchup. Tons of storylines. But I've got the Braves in three over the Padres.
How does that have to happen? What needs to happen for that to be correct?
Atlanta has to win tonight. If Atlanta doesn't win tonight, it's really hard for me to think they're going to be able to go Fried versus Musgrove. And then game three is Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease is waiting. They did not choose to start him for game one. Everybody else is throwing their aces in game one. Skubal's going today. Reagans is going today. Burns is going today. Valdez went today. The Padres are holding Dylan Cease for either game three or game one of the NLDS. They are looking past Atlanta. That's what that tells me. They're not worried about having to beat Atlanta. So Atlanta needs to win tonight so that, you know, because I don't know if you can reliably count on taking down Dylan Cease. Even with Ronald Lopez being great this year, I just don't know if you can count on taking down Dylan Cease.
And there you go. There's your wild card predictions. Lindsey Crosby joins us every Tuesday for our Baseball Power Hour. Plug it all, man. Tell people where they can find you.
I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. You can find the shows. Braves Today is the podcast, and First Pitch, wherever you get your podcast, and all of the writing, bravestoday.com.
There you go. I appreciate you, man. Hopefully you're back in here next week talking about a DS series for the Braves as they start with the Padres tonight in the wild card. You can catch that broadcast here on ESPN 106.7 starting at 7 o'clock on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. We're coming back for hour number two. Christian and I are talking football. Got to get his thoughts a little bit on what happened over the weekend for Auburn, other results around the country, and more of your reactions as well. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go back and listen to the podcast. I've gotten a lot of texts saying a lot of you did that yesterday after what was a wild show here on the airwaves. And so appreciate you doing that, and be sure you do that each and every day if you missed any parts of our show, especially from today. We had our Baseball Power Hour in that first hour. Lindsey Crosby from Braves Today, Auburn Daily, just walked out of here. We talked playoff baseball as the Atlanta Braves are in the postseason. Thankfully, they barely did it, but they did get there, and they played tonight against the San Diego Padres, so we talked about that a lot in hour number one, talked about the other series going on in the wild card today, and so be sure that if you missed any of that or any other parts of the show today, that you go and catch up on our station website in the podcast version at ESPNAU.com. That's also where you can find our SEC Football Challenge, so be sure you get your picks in for that. Those are due Friday at midnight each and every week. Remember, there are weekly prize winners for the best picker each week, and then there is one grand prize winner at the very end of the season for whoever the best picker is. So be sure you get your picks in on that, ESPNAU.com. Here in hour number two, lots of college football talk. All college football talk here in hour number two. Talking Auburn, Oklahoma. Christian Griffin's in the studio with us, voice of Lee Scott. Maybe dip into a little high school stuff here today just to give a few updates real quick, but a lot of college football thoughts on Auburn, Oklahoma, now Auburn, Georgia, other results around the country as well, and we want you to be a part of the show. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390, that number again, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot me a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. Before we get into content, though, I want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here on ESPN during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour from 3 to 4 o'clock each and every day here on ESPN.
Jacob, before we get started with a bunch of college football talk, I want your thoughts on where does October for you rank in the season of sports?
It's up there. It's up there.
Because it's October's MLB postseason. Awesome. You're in the heart of conference football. Yeah. I know you're a big Celtics guy. The NBA gets underway.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things going up there. I will say, for me personally, it's a close second
to April.
Yes. Yep. March Madness, the start of the MLB year, the Masters, that will be a one for me, but I think this time right now is a very, very close second.
Yeah, I think it is between October and April for me. October, you said, it's just there's so much happening, right? College football, college basketball practice begins. I mean, you have some exhibition games for college basketball. You do have MLB postseason, hockey starts, NBA starts, like everything's going. You get the equinoxes here and there, right, in October. I mean, there's a lot going on in the month of October. But April's special, too, because of all the things you mentioned. You've got the Final Four, typically, that first weekend of April, then the national championship game. You've got the Masters. Baseball starts.
NBA postseason as well.
Yeah, NBA postseason, NHL postseason, because they normally start around April 15th. Yeah.
So I guess a follow-up question, is there another month that even comes close to those two? Because just off the top of my head,
I'm thinking February, because of the Super Bowl, heart of college basketball, heart of NBA, NHL season, making playoff pushes. I mean, I think February's a pretty good compare. I mean, I think that ranks up there, maybe.
Or if we're going
because of the Super Bowl,
late December to January, because it's the bowl games and the college football playoff games.
You could say November,
especially now with the 12-team playoffs.
January may be up there too, because that's NFL playoffs. That is heart of NBA, NHL season. Yeah, college football playoffs. I mean, yeah, I think January could get better.
Could, but right now, October and April are still leaps and bounds above the other everybody else.
I like November, too, just because that's the final month of college football. Yeah. You've got rivalry week. You have college basketball. That you have feast week in there where all the big tournaments are going on, right? Maui and all those. So November's up there, too. But, no, I think for me, October's the best. I think October's my favorite sports month of the year.
Well, there we go.
And April is right there behind it. But both are phenomenal. Both are great. And we're looking forward to a fun October. It's wild to think that it's October 1st here. Oh, high school football. Come on. High school football's in there too. October. Boom. Lock it down.
Give it to me.
Boom. Lee Sterling calls it Locktober if you're with him at ParamountSports.com. We'll have him on again this coming Friday. All right, it's time. We've held off long enough. We got to talk more about Auburn and Oklahoma from this past Saturday. I know you people have some thoughts. Got a lot of you on the show yesterday between the phone lines and the text box, and I want to hear from you again, 334-321-1390. And Christian, I know this is your first time to get on the airwaves and really talk about the Auburn-Oklahoma matchup, and it seems to a lot of people, right, after hearing Hugh Freeze talk yesterday during the press conference, last night on Tiger Talk, Peyton Thorne on other radio shows, people are picking everything apart because that's just kind of what happens when your team is 2-3. Fans find things to be upset about, and understandably so. Bottom line is this. Saturday came down to less than five plays.
Yeah.
Less than five plays, and if Auburn either executes better or there's better play calling or better decision-making, plain and simple, Auburn wins that football game.
They do. And I feel like I can name, here, I'll go through five of them in my head. Or I'll have six. Third and goal, fourth and goal at the one.
Yep.
That's two, but I'll say the fourth and goal play. That's one. The pick six is the bookend of one and five. And the three plays following the Jarquez Hunter big run with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter, where you get into OU territory and then essentially, after one play, go three and out. Incomplete pass with a bad RPO that was almost intercepted, a miscommunication along the boundary, and then you run the ball on third down followed by a missed field goal. That spot right there, crazy to think. After a run play, you have 40 seconds to snap the football again. Jarquez Hunter had a big gain, brought him into Oklahoma territory. The drive lasted a minute and 15 seconds after getting to the plus side of the field. A minute and 15 seconds.
Where you were in full waste the clock mode.
Which, yeah.
Should have been.
Well, for some reason they were, and then it just all of a sudden didn't work out. And it could be one of those scenarios to where if the RPO is read the right way and you find Cam Coleman on that the route on the left side, you get the first down, everything is okay. But there hasn't been that production, right? It hasn't been the trust level in the backfield, at least with one of the guys. But with 27, you feel like there should be plenty of trust there. And again, I don't feel like his number was called enough, whether that be on the third down, fourth and goal, on any time where it's, hey, let's hand the ball off to the preseason SEC All-American more than eight times.
And I'll say this, and T-Bone and I talked about this a little bit yesterday. Hugh Freeze doubled down on Tiger Talk last night. Like, Freeze has taken responsibility for most of those plays. I mean, Monday's press conference, I was there. He sat through, somebody asked him about it, and he said, let me walk you through the plays that I regret.
Yeah.
And he walked us through it. And while that's good, while that's, some would say, progress, right, on what has been through the first 4 weeks compared to what we just saw in week five, fans are asking, okay, that's great, but at what point do you make that call and make that realization in the game before it happens? And I know you weren't here yesterday, but we had people texting in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067, that says Hugh Freeze is a great recruiter. Hugh Freeze is a great game planner. His coaching staff is good at game planning. But we have people telling us that he's not a good in-game coach. And I think you look at the first five games this season and you look at the season a year ago. I said this on the show yesterday. I'll double down and say it. Tell me one game that we walked away from in Hugh Freeze's young career at Auburn and said, man, that was a really well-coached game. He called a good game. I'm proud of what Hugh Freeze did during the game. I don't have an example of it.
Alabama A&M.
Stop. Stop. That's better game planning than anything.
It
in
is.
A game like that, I mean, yeah. You have very few actual tough decisions to make, right? I mean, it's New Mexico State you did, but you lost, so you can't use that as an example. And that's the problem. That's where we are. Fans are not trusting Hugh Freeze to call a good game because they're leaving the stadium disappointed based off of his decisions.
And it's based off of the result, right? He talked about it on Monday of how it's tough, but in a league and in a world like this, everybody is results oriented in a time that he's trying to get Auburn to be, you don't want to say not result oriented, but progress oriented. And once you sit back, I do feel like I do see it. Granted, it's hard to see that when you sit at a record of 2-3 and you've played five teams that you feel like you are better than.
You were favored.
Right.
In all five games.
So it makes it to where you're sitting there, oh, well, what progress then? What progress do you truly see if you're walking away where preseason, not everybody, but a bunch of people were fully expecting Auburn to look at a 4-1 or 5-0 start heading into Athens and just think about the two different scenarios that are happening right now. The different mindset of the hype behind the team of even if you find a way to drop in Athens, or not find a way, but even if you drop the game in Athens, you go to the bye week, you're sitting at 5-1, you still love where you're at, rather than right now you're kind of staring down the barrel of a 2-4, 2-5 start.
Well, that brings up an interesting point because I said yesterday that when I walked out of the presser yesterday morning, afternoon, I had a different feeling than most people. Because when I go back and watch the game from Saturday, and I've done so a couple of times, when you go back and watch it, and even watching it in the game, right? I was like, man, Auburn took a step forward. The team took a step forward this week in terms of their performance and their execution and the lack of turnovers and the effort and the energy and the IQ. I mean, Auburn, the players, took a step forward. And I think they believe that too. I talked to Eugene Asante this week. He'll be with us, or he'll be with Bill and Dan tomorrow for Tiger Takes on Wednesdays during the drive. And talking with him, and he can feel that, and they can feel that. The team feels that they got better this week. But the issue is they were let down by their coach. They were let down by their coaching staff. But you look at this game, and it's really hard to do so in a loss where you should have won. But I encourage fans to go through and watch this game and make comparisons to just 2 weeks ago against Arkansas. This team didn't turn it over as much. This team got off the field on third downs. This team stopped big plays other than two. This team stopped the run defensively. This team ran the ball really well. Auburn didn't have as many drops on Saturday. Like, you start comparing to what the first 4 weeks of the season were, or even just the other losses so far this year, you have gotten better. And that's really tough to see, Christian. But I firmly believe that Auburn got better this week.
And I 100% agree with you. And that's why it's tough, because, again, everybody wants to live in a results-oriented world.
Sure.
But going
final results.
Right.
Yeah.
But going back to what you're saying, look at the – if you're going to go back and you watch the game covering up the scoreboard versus from last week or from 2 weeks ago to this past week, or the Cal game versus last week. You look at the Cal game, just mentally think about how dreadful it was to sit there and have to watch the offense. You got to watch the offense last week against Oklahoma. You watched the offense put up 482 yards of total offense. And this is, again, taking out the score completely off of things. 482 yards of total offense. Can you give me a stat about total offense in Cal?
I can momentarily.
But going back, Auburn had 26 first downs to Oklahoma's 11. Auburn's defense only gave up 291 yards of total offense. And again, 482 yards of total offense against the team that Hugh Freeze said is filled with NFL talent in that secondary.
That is 202 yards more than they had against California, totaling at 286.
And here, well, let's see. What was it against?
Against Arkansas.
Against Arkansas, we're looking at 431, so almost
50 yards more.
Right.
Which is improvement. Again, it's improvement. And so it's so frustrating. And look, for fans that are frustrated, I promise you Hugh Freeze is too. And I know this seems to be a reverse of what the energy was from yesterday, but I don't like having that energy all the time because it's toxic.
That's almost like the immediate.
It is.
After, like, Saturday night, Sunday morning.
Right.
That's type energy where you're having to watch Alabama, Georgia, and just sit there wanting to die.
But as I said to T-Bone yesterday, what made Saturday so disappointing was, yes, Auburn got better. The team played better. The team played winning football, and we were hoping that that was the turning point. That was the game that told us it's going to be okay. And yet, you found a way to lose it and what fans describe as the most Auburn way ever. And that's disappointing. That is very, very upsetting because that puts a halt in the progress you made. That puts an asterisk next to this game because you did get better. And 9 times out of 10, if you get better in a tough loss, that's progress. That's okay. Right, and I said this yesterday, if Oklahoma had come in here and just gone play for play, pound for pound, and Auburn lost on a Hail Mary or a 50-yard game-winning field goal or something like that at the end, then we'd probably have a different mindset this week. We'd probably be like, you know, that's tough, but you could see how it got better. It's the fact that you had a 98% chance to win the football game at one point, and you blow it. That's where Auburn fans get disappointed.
And again, I mean, it's the same boat that we sit in. We're just trying to bring the different perspective and the perspective that inside the program is trying to feed out, which I feel like is what's needed to be done. There was a media question asked about, well, how do you keep this team, you know, focused without spiraling downward? And Freeze was basically saying, you know, the media loves to talk about that side of things, but inside the program, if you ever even think that that's a possibility to begin the season, you don't have the right guys wearing the numbers and the pads, and you don't have the right guys coaching them. And I think that Auburn has the right guys. I mean, you talk about just the energy on the sideline with all of the assistant coaches. These kids want to go out and play for those guys and play for the orange and blue, play for Auburn, play for the fans, but being result-oriented as a fan just makes it so much tougher to swallow the overall result of being 2-3, where, I mean, you hate to have the mindset of if we played them more times, we'd win.
Would you say 9 out of 10 or 10?
Probably 9 out of 10. Or if I had to make the decision again, I would probably still do the same thing. But
oh, geez.
In a spot where Coach Freeze talked about it, where he doesn't want to take anything from those other teams, but rather than the other teams going out and winning them, Auburn found a way to lose the game. And that's what I think you're talking about, where if Oklahoma were to go out and win the game on a drive where you have 30 seconds left, you complete two passes, kick a 55-yard field goal, and Oklahoma steals the win from you on the road, then
you tip your hat.
Tip your cap. Ah, great game. You beat us. But instead,
Auburn could have won rather than Auburn should have won.
Right. Rather than the reality, Auburn has lost all three games this year.
334-321-1390. I know you got thoughts. Get in on this. We want to hear from you here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Want to talk quarterbacks when we come back. Has Peyton Thorne secured the starting spot for Auburn moving forward? And if not, who has? We'll talk about that when we come back here on ESPN Radio.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, Christian Griffin of the Lee Scott Warriors, voice of the Lee Scott Warriors, joining us here on the show. And before we talk quarterbacks for Auburn, do want to get a quick high school update. Lee Scott, you guys were off last week, right? You guys were enjoying the bye week in Auburn High. We were not supposed to be off, but we had a non-traditional bye week, I guess is the best way to put it. We were supposed to play at Moody last Thursday with the weather and everything, and man, that just continues to get worse. I mean, I just continue to see terrible updates on the weather and the results of that. And so thoughts and prayers still to all those affected and impacted by that, which is much, much bigger than, of course, high school football games. But, yes, Lee Scott, you guys were off a week ago. Auburn High was off a week ago. Lee Scott had an extra week to think about the loss to Randolph County. So now they get ready to host Dadeville over at Jet Scott Field this week.
They do. 4-1 heading into the bye week, which all things considered, moving up into the AHSAA, I think Lee Scott would take that 100% of the time. By no means do I want to say that they overlooked Randolph County, but the type of offense that they ran, that wing T, almost like a wishbone type of formation.
It's unique.
You want to draw comparisons to other teams that use it, right? And that's just kind of the way that minds work. If Georgia uses the same offense as Alabama, they kind of go off of that and they compare it. That being said, a week of preparation only does so much to a team that runs it with success. There's a bunch of high school teams that run the wing T and run the wishbone simply because they feel like they have to. Randolph County used the wishbone and the wing T because they could.
And what's interesting about those types of teams, not sorry to cut you off, they've done that since Pee Wee football.
Right, and that's
they've
what I'm saying.
They've ran that the entire way through, and that way when they get to varsity level, they're running it to perfection.
They have mastered it, and that was kind of something that was my takeaway from the game, where it was just a week of preparation doesn't do it for a team like that masters it the way that you do, to where they run it almost like a triple option where there's three, possibly four different guys that can get the ball every single time that you snap the football. So much of that read is on the quarterback, and he made the right read every single time. And then you add any speed to that on top of that. After running the ball up the middle twice, it'd be third and three. All of a sudden, you run a pitch to the outside where it's man-to-man or you're one-on-one with the safety. It's just so hard to try and make up for that, or try and have 1 week to prepare. So that Randolph County offense is a very, very good offense. I did love what I saw from Lee Scott on the offensive side of the football. The ability to throw the ball downfield hasn't come with the most success, or at least the with persistence, or with comfortability, you could say.
Okay.
It's almost been, we need to throw the ball deep, we will. Instead, they took shots on 1st and 10 or 2nd and 1. And it really worked out. I mean, you have some guys on Lee Scott's team that can go out and make a play on a 50-50 ball, and they did. And so you take that loss on the chin, you have basically 13 days to recover from it, and then you move on. And as you mentioned, Dadeville at home. A nice little home stretch now for Lee Scott. Five games remaining. Four of the final five games are at home. It was a very road schedule top-heavy start to your season. So to have four of your final five games at home at Judd Scott Field, a really, really big bonus for Lee Scott.
Yeah, bonus for you guys and the broadcasters as well, doing a fantastic job. Those games can be heard on AU 100 on Friday nights. It's 100.3 FM, AU100FM.com. You guys are on the air Friday night, pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7. In my world, Auburn High, we got the week off. Game at Moody on Thursday was canceled due to the rain, so an untraditional bye week. And Central Phoenix City also had an untraditional bye week. They were supposed to play IMG. That team cannot get out of Tampa because of the weather, so both teams called their games off, and they got a few extra days to prepare for each other. Number one Central, number two Auburn High this Friday night. It's at Central, unfortunately. We do have to go to Phoenix City, and if you're from around here,
you
know.
Down like 13-0 right now.
I was going to say, I don't know, man. I only know what I hear, and if you're from around here, you know the reputation. I'm just kidding. Well, it's going to be tough. Playing on the road is tough regardless, and there's nowhere like playing at Duck Sanford Stadium, but we're going to make the quick trip to Phoenix City, number one and number two this Friday.
And what a cool scenario it is that both teams got that bye.
Yeah.
Very, very comparable to Alabama-Georgia this past week, where both teams had 13 days to prepare for the other, where it's not going to be nothing that one team shows you on the field is going to be a surprise.
Correct. Everything.
Or at least not from anything that they've shown. There might be, you know, a package or two that you try and run once to get a chunk play, but other than that, it's going to simply come down to execution.
Yeah, both teams 5-0, and in 7A football in this region, Central's 5-0, Auburn's 5-0, Carver-Montgomery is 5-0, but that wow. Carver team plays, if I remember this correctly, Enterprise this week, Central next week, Auburn the following week, and Opelika the week after
that.
That's an
SEC schedule right there.
That is it. And this region is so tough, man. It's a few teams fighting for it. But yes, this Friday night, Wings 94.3, WingsFM.com. If you don't want to make the trip to Central Phoenix City, I get it. I understand. You can listen to us on Wings 94.3. All three of us will be there, Jack Cudden, Rob Pate, and myself. Really looking forward to it. For myself, just selfishly, the biggest, probably the biggest regular season game I've been a part of so far in my career. Really, really looking forward to my first Auburn and Central matchup. Winner will be the number one team in the region, will most likely go on to be the number one team. The schedule doesn't get easier, though. Auburn still has Smith Station on that schedule, Carver-Montgomery on that schedule, Dothan on that schedule as well. So season nowhere near done in high school football, but you can catch Lee Scott and Auburn High Friday nights. Lee Scott on AU 100 with Christian and Rhett Chrome, and myself with Auburn High School, Rob Pate and Jack Cudden. We will talk quarterbacks and talk the offense, and where does Auburn University go from here as Georgia is up next for the Tigers. We'll talk about that and more. We'd love to get your thoughts here on the Tuesday edition of the show. 334-321-1390.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, joined by Christian Griffin, voice of Lee Scott in the studio.
Your other man.
We want to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Talking offense for Auburn University and Hugh Freeze and the performance of Peyton Thorne on Saturday. And I know we say this a lot, to take out the bad play. Take out the one bad play. I'm not saying to completely forget about it and move on and 100% say it wasn't his fault. I still believe, Christian, that he should have never been put in that situation. Peyton Thorne never should have been throwing on a five-wide set on third and short inside of Oklahoma territory after two incompletions after you were trying to run off the clock, score, and win the football game and put the dagger in the Sooners. Okay? That is a fact. That's a fact. He never should have been put in that situation. Now, the numbers showed that Oklahoma was going to get some pressure. It was 6-on-5. That doesn't add up good for the offense. And Peyton Thorne had to throw the ball quicker than he wanted to because the guy came off the edge. He didn't see the linebacker that dropped, and he threw it right into his hands, and he returned it for a pick six. We all understand how the play went down, okay? But you take that play out of it, and I had told my dad minutes before, so I'll take blame for it, Peyton Thorne probably played the best game of his college career on Saturday. Definitely in his Auburn career.
Against a P4 school.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. That's fair. Against a P4 legitimate team.
Right.
Against one of the best defenses in the SEC, take that play out, and Peyton Thorne did exactly what you wanted him to do. Peyton Thorne was the quarterback that Auburn fans have been looking for.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, pulling up the stat line right now, I mean, 21 of 32, threw for 338 yards and 3 touchdowns. Granted, some of that was fluffed by the quote-unquote Hail Mary that was, you know, a 40-yard gain caught at the 10-yard line or whatever, but answered every single question mark that was kind of asked of him as of late. Also ran the ball, including some sacks, 17 times for 23 yards. So it only statistically shows up as a yard and a half per rush, but there were multiple times where he was able to get out of the pocket or actually put his foot in the ground and go north and south. And Hugh Freeze talked about it where there's, did he call it the oh crap package like that on Monday?
That's what
he said, yeah. Where if your first, second, and possibly even your third read is not there, get north and south, pick up 3 yards, make it second down and 7 rather than second down and 14. Because second and 7, you still have the entire playbook to work with. And he did that multiple times. He didn't break off the 25 or 30-yard run that he has in a couple other games, but he took care of the football. He didn't get sacked. He didn't get his happy feet in the backfield trying to make a play, trying to keep his eyes downfield, not really knowing what exactly to do. I'm trying to see how many sacks Oklahoma had. It doesn't show it on here.
But I don't remember. I'd have to look.
But again, it wasn't something that stood out where Oklahoma had 9 sacks against Auburn. He did the right thing, and it sucks for Thorne. It sucks for us, obviously, as well, because based off of the 4 games prior, the one play that ultimately decided the game against Oklahoma is something that is just highlighted that much more because the interceptions have been the issue. But you should go back to it, 4 sacks, mm-hmm. and I think 2 of them were either late in the third or early in the fourth quarter. But again, it's just that the one play that ultimately decides the game, you hate that that's the one that was highlighted because that's been the issue throughout the season, is turning the ball over.
And what's crazy, too, is people have talked about the missed field goals of Towns Magoo, one of the best, if not the best kicker in the country last year, right here at Auburn High. Both of his kicks were not close. They were bad kicks. It was in his head, it seemed like. But you think about it, you make one of those field goals, the chip shot within 30 yards. I'm not asking him to make the 51-yarder every time, but the one that's within 30 yards, you make that, and the pick six is irrelevant. The pick six happens, sure, but it's irrelevant because Oklahoma was still down, and Auburn would have been up. Auburn was up by 5 at that point, is that right? They were up by 5, and then the pick 6 happened. Oklahoma goes up. Auburn makes that field goal earlier in the game. The pick 6, it hurts, but it doesn't end the game.
Well, that,
you don't lose on that.
No, and then even going back to the field goal, the 51-yarder, that goes back to the plays that I was talking about where Jarquez Hunter had the big rush to get into Oklahoma territory, and then you essentially went 3 and out. Even if you were to run the ball 3 more times and not pick up a first down and it be 4th and 1 or whatever, it makes it a 44-yard field goal, which, I mean, again, is comparable for what it is. 44 and 51 is still a relatively mid to long field goal in the college world. But right after the missed field goal, you had the bomb overthrown, or it was Oklahoma. Felt like they had the momentum shift a little bit, took that shot, and ultimately found their way into the end zone. Just little momentum plays like that where if you find a way to keep yourself out of that situation on offense, then it makes it to where a play like that doesn't happen. Or go back to making the field goal, you make Oklahoma, you know, then all of the momentum goes back with Auburn, then you make Oklahoma go 75 yards on a normal drive rather than immediately a gut punch following a missed field goal.
And I know they had the field goal there at the very end. And credit to Andy and Brad last night at Tiger Talk, which you can catch on Mondays on Wings 94.3. They asked Hugh Freeze about the very end of the game, the 10-second runoff. Do you remember seeing this?
Yeah.
They asked Hugh Freeze about this, and he tried to answer the best he could without incriminating himself. He said, I have no idea. He said the 10-second runoff happened off of something that Auburn had nothing to do with because they reviewed it, right? Yeah. They reviewed the play, and then Auburn got the 10-second runoff and lost 10 of their final few seconds of the ball game after they were down by 6. Now, was that going to ultimately lead Auburn to score? I don't know. Probably not.
But it could possibly turn a 60-yard Hail Mary into a 35-yard.
Yeah. And Freeze was like, yeah, he said last night on Tiger Talk, he said, I asked them straight up, are you sure you're right? Are you sure that you know what you're talking about? And I don't think he meant it in a disrespectful way. It was double check, because that doesn't make any sense. And there were so many things like that in a game, but yeah. 6-point loss, it hurts, man. Those things add up.
And another thing that is weird, what going off to what you're saying, is it's one thing, I don't disagree with the rule in certain aspects. If it's one of those injuries where you don't have a timeout under 2 minutes or whatever, now that you've seen so many Ole Miss teams fake injuries to get, you know, little timeouts here and there, I don't hate the 10-second runoff if it's something that your team does. But because of a missed spot by an official, which I never thought that he had the first down to begin with, but when Auburn is immediately looking over at the referee and he's sitting there signaling first down, the chains begin to move, why would you not take 3 or 4 more seconds, gather yourself, get ready to run another play? But then the officials essentially take that 10 seconds for themselves due to a misjudgment.
Speaking of Ole Miss and that, just for me to go on a tangent for a second, how sad was that? How sad was that of Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, who did it not once, not twice, I lost count, 4 or 5 like memorable times that they had a player fake an injury, go, and let me say this, Auburn has not been the best team about this in the past. Auburn has been caught doing it plenty of times with past regimes, but Ole Miss did it numerous times.
Well, there was one time where there's literally a back camera, and it's showing the backfield with Jackson Dart and the running back, and you can see Jackson Dart giving the motion, and you see his lips say, hey, get down, go down. And it's like something, I mean, just...
And but, they lost, so karma.
Is it something like where if you like don't play anybody at all in the regular season and hype yourself up that much to where then you actually play a team that can actually compete, it kind of like comes back to haunt you? Is that something that – has that ever worked or not worked in life?
Are you talking about Gonzaga?
Possibly.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean –
In case you didn't know, they're playing real teams in the regular season now. They
really?
They've decided to go to the Pac-12.
No more Sacramento State Penitentiary –
No,
college, university, state, and college.
No, they don't know exactly who they're playing because nobody wants to be in the Pac-12 because it's a dying league still. But Gonzaga did decide finally that they want to play somebody.
And
speaking
of conference, I know there was something that we talked about with the SEC and the Big Ten the new playoff talks. For anybody that hasn't heard about it,
I think this broke after we went off the air yesterday.
Okay, I didn't know if y'all talked about it yesterday at all, but the SEC and Big Ten are meeting in Nashville to possibly talk about. I don't know if it's sending in a letter or something, but basically asking to receive...
joining forces.
Right, but asking to have 4 automatic bids per conference for the 12-team playoff.
What a wild
which
concept.
Is a really, really wild concept, and this is not something that I agree with nor disagree with. This is just stating kind of the pros and cons, where if you do look at it and it's, okay, SEC, line up your Big 4, Big 10, line up your Big 4... And it's, okay, we're going to give you, I mean, Georgia, Texas, Alabama, and say Ole Miss. Since that was the other top favorite or whatever for the SEC, all of a sudden you go, okay, ACC, who do you got? And it's, oh, well, we have Miami who won thanks to the officials overturning a call that had no right being overruled. We had Clemson who... beat NC State. Oh, Tennessee beat them too. Dang it. Okay, next. Get back to us.
Yeah.
Big Ten's going, okay, we'll give you Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon and whoever else. Like, it's just, again, not that I agree with the topic. It is a wild concept to think about, but I don't know.
The SEC and the Big Ten are meeting. You mentioned that. Heather Dinich wrote an article yesterday on ESPN. You can go check that out, ESPN.com. They are meeting to join forces in a possible partnership in football scheduling. It says it's a continuation of the Big Ten-SEC Joint Advisory Group. It's got a bunch of, you know, big name people on there. It says the future scheduling partnership could hinge on whether the SEC eventually decides to go to 9 conference games, one that most people think is going to happen. It says sources in both leagues told ESPN on Monday they would prefer to have potentially 4 automatic bids each to the playoff when the next contract begins in 2026. We don't know what that's going to look like yet because we don't know what it's going to look like past next season, how many teams that's going to be, how many automatic bids, whatever. But, yeah, SEC and Big Ten are saying, hey, we deserve to have 4 teams. And however many teams are in the playoff, we need at least 4 because we feel that our conferences are that much superior to everybody else.
And I feel like it goes back to the conversation that we've had plenty of times to where it's not long until those two form a super conference and leave the NCAA as a whole. I don't think that that's too far away, to be completely honest with you. And I feel like this is the first type of step. It's either that or it's going to, for an NFL comparison, it's going to become the NFC versus the AFC, essentially, with the SEC turning to 30 teams and the Big Ten turning to 30 teams, and all of a sudden it's our 1 plays your 8, your 1 plays our 8, or, you know, however many teams make it to the playoffs or whatever. But that's essentially what it looks in the distant future. Looks like it's kind of in the early stages of coming.
And I like the idea of the Big Ten and SEC getting together and saying, look, we don't know what the future holds, but let's stick together through this. Let's play each other and let's see what we can do, because we know we're the best. We know that we're better than everybody else and it's really not even close. So let's stick together. Let's schedule each other. Let's play each other and let's lock arms and let's walk into the office of ESPN and the College Football Playoff and say, and basically demand that they put the most of our teams in. Now, at this very moment, a 12-team or even a 14-team playoff where the SEC and the Big Ten would have 8 of those automatic bids, yeah, the ACC and the Big 12 and the Pac-12, whatever that's going to look like, they're not going to be overly pleased with that. They're not going to be super happy. But to your point, it's like, okay, let's prove it on the field. Let's show our best 4 and your best 4, and let's see who comes out on top. Whether you think that's fair or not, I don't know. I don't really care. My mom told me the fair is in August. And so for the SEC and the Big Ten, they have an argument to where they could put almost every team in the College Football Playoff, and they would win out more times than not.
You hear that, Auburn fans? So you're saying there's a chance.
SEC, SEC. Yeah,
it just means
right.
More, baby.
That's right. Keep that patch on your jersey, and you've got a chance, baby. You've got a chance. Doesn't matter if you're 2-3. The playoff is not that far away.
It's not. And if we make it, 9, no, sorry, not even gonna go.
10 out of 10 times when Auburn makes the College Football Playoff, they would win it. Or I would make the same decision to say that they should be in there or not be in there.
What do we know?
334-321-1390. I know we got to take our final break here on the show. We'll come back and wrap it all up on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. It's flown by, as it does most days when we're having fun. And so if you missed any of the show today, you can go and catch up with the podcast. You'll find it on our station website after the show at ESPNAU.com. You can do that today. You can do that for any of our shows, any of the guests, any of the segments, anything that you want to go back and listen to, you can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. We had Lindsey Crosby in the studio for hour number 1, had our baseball power hour postseason edition. That's right, the Atlanta Braves are in the playoffs. Lots of other teams getting in the wild card this weekend, or I guess this week right now, as they are currently playing. What's the score update on the Tigers game?
3-0 Tigers still in game one on the road, top eight with two outs. So
God, the beat Tigers, the Astros.
Tigers, who I'm sure y'all, I think you talked about it in the first segment a little bit, how the Tigers had like a 1% chance to make the playoffs. Yeah. In
that radio call was so good.
It was.
It was so magical. Oh, God, it hit a broadcaster's heart. It just touched it.
And that's something we've talked about, to where plays that are big plays are awesome, but calls just elevate it so much more, especially if you were a big-time Tigers fan and you were able to connect yourself with that moment.
You've been following that team all year where like they were just down and out and then made one of the most magical runs in the end of the regular season. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And then Orioles-Royals kicked off, right? First pitched. Kicked off is kind of the universal.
Aren't you a broadcaster?
No, but I'm just saying kicked off is kind of the universal term for like a bunch of sports.
I guess you could say it's underway. Has started. The first has pitch, begun.
But I said that comically about the whole situation of how you can say kicked off for any sport and it kind of works. Is top four right now. 0-0 pitchers duel.
Top four.
Yeah.
Wow.
With Cole Riggins and Corbin Burns, I think both of them have thrown literally like 32 pitches through three innings.
Wow. Okay, so those two games are underway. Another big game that comes on tonight in the wild card is the Braves. They're in San Diego, taking on the Padres. Coverage begins at 7 p.m., and in case you missed it, you can find that right here on ESPN 106.7. Game 1, Game 2, and the Game 3 of the wild card series in San Diego right here on ESPN 106.7. It begins tonight at 7 p.m. It's the national broadcast. Roxy Bernstein, Auburn's own Craig Olson, will be on the call tonight, so be sure that you tune in for that. So we talked a lot about that in the first hour with Lindsey Crosby from Braves Today, Auburn Daily. And then here in hour number two, lots of Auburn football talk, breaking down more of the Auburn-Oklahoma game. Got into a little bit of college football discussion there. The SEC, Big Ten are still in discussions trying to figure out what they're going to do for the future of college football. Yesterday, before we left, Christian, I asked T-Bone his biggest result, biggest takeaway from college football this weekend. I'll allow you to do the same thing. We got about a minute and a half. Biggest takeaway from college football this weekend.
Ryan Williams, I think, is he 18? 19?
Oh, in case, no. He's 17.
Should he be a senior in high school?
He should still be in high school.
Okay,
he should. He should still be in high school asking permission to go to the restroom, but instead he's killing everybody and he's catching really big plays and winning games for Alabama.
Do you see the picture of the two Alabama players?
Yeah.
And one of them had the Bible verse on his head.
The other one says, kill everybody. And then Doug had a huge thing about this today. He changed his profile picture to Michael Vick. It's like, oh, God. What are we doing?
I'll say my biggest takeaway of the whole entire week is how absolutely amazing Kirby Smart is as a coach. I will say, and that's kind of a hot take with everything, but for your team to be down 21-0 at the end of one and be getting their butt kicked at halftime and to come out and even show yourself and show life in the second half, much less to come back and take the lead, regardless of how everything went down, Kirby's just proven himself why, as much as it sucks to say, another rival, it's hard to beat somebody like that on the field, and much less, I mean, those pregame interviews or the pregame hype speeches that he gives are some of the best. Don't play them on air, but some of the better ones that he gives, and it just shows his ability to coach is absolutely phenomenal.
Coming up on tomorrow's show, Wednesdays are about flipping the page, turning the page to the next week. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, he'll join us to talk about that Alabama-Georgia game and how the Dogs are getting ready for Auburn to come to Athens this weekend. And Double D, Daryl Dapperich, will join us talking Auburn-Oklahoma and talking Auburn-Georgia. We'll look at some other games going on around the SEC this weekend. Missouri, Texas A&M, Bama, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, Arkansas. Lots of interesting games coming up this weekend around the SEC, so that's coming up on the show tomorrow.
Something crazy. I have a Saturday wedding in 2 weeks.
I have a Saturday wedding this weekend.
What's wrong with people?
I know. I'm in this one. I'm the best man. I can't miss it.
Golly. I mean, what are we doing?
Saturday weddings, fall weddings, what are we doing? Be better, says Christian Griffin, voice of the Lee Scott Warriors. He will be back on Friday. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.